focus on the positive, you get nowhere focusing on the negative. It's just a trap.
Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pinnock. Well, I'm excited to have Matt Dawson on the Passion Behind the Art Show. We are fellow Georgians, so it's pretty cool to have another creative, right? Not too local creative on the podcast. Matt, welcome.
Thank you for having me, man. It's good to, chat and catch up with you.
Sounds good. Sounds good. So how did Matt's journey start into design?
Not too unlike many other creatives. You know, I feel like when you're, you know, when you've got that creative bone, it stays with you. I definitely didn't start out like wanting to be a designer or anything from like a little kid. I kind of went through different phases of like what I wanted to be or what I thought I wanted to do and this and that, all the way up to college actually. And I went to school down in Louisiana at LSU, and I was in an art program, but it was architecture. It was landscape architecture. So, you know, I'd taken all the core classes and all of your prereqs and the fun theory and intro to design. And, you know, like all that stuff was great. And then I got into like the real meat and potatoes of like landscape architecture and math and in engineering and grading. And I was like, whoa. Pumped the brakes a little bit, but, you know, yeah, I still liked it, and I stuck with it for a long time. I stuck with it 4 out of the 5 years, but, you know, you just kind of, you get to a point where you have to ask yourself, like, oh, man, is this really what I want to do the rest of my life? You know, right. I don't know if I can do it one more year. How am I going to do this until I retire? So, I kind of had to take a step back and look at what it was that I enjoyed while being in it, and all signs kind of pointed back to design. And honestly, I didn't know what graphic design was. You know, I think a lot of people still don't, but you know, like I was definitely one of those people back in the day. And sure, like everybody thought it was probably the coolest thing ever to design like an album cover, but like, I still didn't know what it was called. And I didn't know how many different like facets that, you know, like design encompassed, you know.
Right.
I mean, design is just everywhere. And once I kind of opened up my mind to that, it was like, yeah, this is the move.
I know that feeling of, because that's where I started too, in architecture.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, so yeah, I to the point where I even got a job at an engineering agency.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's usually when you get the awakening, when you got to deal with the math and the engineering part.
Yeah, I don't know how you are with that stuff, but I mean, I fear whenever our kid brings home our first math homework assignment and got a director to my wife, and be like, you take this one.
No, but to be honest, like I was a pretty good math student, but it was still insane.
Mm-hmm.
It was just still insane.
Sure.
So,
yeah. So now, architecture. Go ahead.
Nah. So I was saying, now that you're all right, it's clear you don't want to do architecture. You want to do design. So how did that come about? How did that transition? Did you just start practicing? Like, how did that switch happen?
Well, you know, after I kind of educated myself to what design was and realized that, you know, I'm kind of doing a lot of that work right now. You know, like I was looking at some of my projects, and you know, like we would have these big pitches in landscape architecture where you'd make a cover page and you'd make like a style sheet. And I was like, that's so funny because this is what I'm enjoying doing. And this is design.
Right.
So like that kind of like just certain things aligned, you know, like that aligned. I had spoken with a couple of professors about it. I had done my homework, and I mean, this was a long time ago. I mean, this was like 10, 12, I don't know. It was a while ago. And, you know, like we didn't have all the resources that we do now. Now you can type in graphic design. You've got Dribbble, Creative, like all these resources that, you know, like it, graphic design is very much a thing now. But back then you really kind of had to do some digging. And, you know, so like I had stopped midway through semester while I was in landscape. I was like, there's no point in continuing on with the semester. Let me get my ducks in a row, research, you know, make sure this is what I want to do. LSU had a portfolio requirement and I didn't have a portfolio. So I had to build one from scratch by assigning myself projects and kind of looking at what, you know, what a typical entry portfolio looked like for the design curriculum there. And I basically taught myself for a semester and a summer and hit it hard that fall and applied. And, yeah, that's kind of, and I started all over from scratch. I was the old guy by that point. So I was the old guy with all the, you know, young 18, 19 year olds that are, you know, they already had it figured out. And so yeah, I was that guy.
Okay, cool. So, all right. So now you've left LSU. Like, how did you get out into the work world? Did you just leave LSU and just went straight into just designing for yourself?
No. I mean, I've kind of been through the ringer, man. I've done a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate upon graduating to land a job, which wasn't, you know, it wasn't commonplace back then. It was very, very rare. But I was fortunate enough to do so, and it was exciting at the time. You know, like you look back on it, and everything's a stepping stone and a you know, learning opportunity. But and that was in the publishing world. So I had worked for a magazine publisher, and we published, oh man, I don't know. I was there for 2.5, almost 3 years, and we had like 4 publications that came out monthly. So a lot of ads, a lot of editorial design. And, you know, like whenever you're in school and you're starting out, nobody wants to mess with InDesign. Everybody's like Illustrator and Photoshop. Right. InDesign's that program that nobody knows anything about, and it frustrates them. And, you know, so I was thrust into the InDesign world, you know, like doing page layouts and whatnot. And I kind of fell in love with it, you know, so I was kind of like the oddball designer where people would ask me what my preferred program was. I was like, oh, InDesign. InDesign. but that publishing world really kind of, you know, it gave me a lot of different experience because, you know, it taught me a lot of fundamental rules about design that, you know, like you kind of skip over in school, or if you don't learn on your own, you don't learn. So, you know, like designing with the grid and, you know, working with clients on their advertisements. Cause I mean, you know, a lot of times the publication is like 40, 60, you know, ads to content.
Right.
So we were building a lot of ads, you know, like we were doing a lot of, type treatments for covers and this and that. So, you know, while it was like one sole discipline, there are a lot of different areas that I got to explore while I was there. And, you know, from there I went to, advertising agencies, design agencies, and, you know, kind of just found my footing, you know, again, with the stepping stone, you know, figuring out where I wanted to go and ultimately, you know, the type of design I wanted to focus on.
Which is?
I guess if I really had to, you know, put a label on it, it's branding and identity. Mm-hmm. You know, so like starting, it's funny, like starting from not knowing a lick about design to doing editorial stuff, and then, you know, becoming, for better or worse, the logo guy, which a lot of times I get emails, you're the logo guy, right? Sure. But you know, like there's something about branding and identity that, you know, always kind of stuck out to me, even back in the day.
Right.
You know, it just seemed like one of those really just interesting areas of design. And I feel lucky to have somehow climbed my way to to that little niche. Of course, I still like doing anything and everything because I feel like it's important to be able to do as much as you can to stay sharp. So
makes sense. Makes sense. So now you're doing your own thing. You're working on your own. How do you keep that going? Because it's not an easy thing.
It's not an easy thing. And, you know, it came from years of sitting on my behind and doing nothing on the side to realize and wanting, you know, like I would get home from work and be like, I had a rough day at work, but I really want to do this. And I found myself complaining more than doing. And I think that comes from, you know, being naive and young. And I realized, well, hey, I have to have this job right now. But if I do want to get to this next level, I'm going to have to start pushing myself outside of that. You know, I've got to stay true to my responsibilities at the workplace. But if I want to get ahead, I've got to kind of give myself a wake up call and start a side hustle. Essentially, you know, like I know that term gets thrown around a lot, but if it weren't for me kind of having that epiphany, I wouldn't have, I wouldn't have ended up going down the path that has brought me where I am. So, you know, like I had a day job and I would come home and slowly but surely started gaining clients and doing everything on nights and weekends, for years, you know, for about 4 or 5 years till it really got to the point this past year where I was like, hey, you know, this is kind of the scales are tipping. Right. Maybe this is finally the reality, you know, that I can reach now. Gotcha. And it's been, I quit my agency job back in March. And I say I've been on my own since then, but I've really kind of been on my own for about 4 years now.
Right.
Doing a full-time day job and a full-time, you know, running my own design gig.
Yeah, so it wasn't like on the side, really. It was on the side, but it was just as overbearing as a regular day job.
Right. It was just as intense, you know. Like, it was probably very unhealthy, but, you know, I was getting very little sleep. And I don't recommend that at all. Like, that's the path I had to take, you know. Like, but... Yeah, pretty much true.
So how did that affect family life?
You know, that's one of the reasons why I lost a lot of sleep, because I still wanted to spend time with my family. It's not like I would get home from my day job and go hole up in an office and, you know, not eat dinner or anything like that. I still wanted to do the family thing and, you know, be a part of that. So I would have a little bit of break in between work and bedtime for them. And then, you know, they'd go to bed. We'd do the whole nighttime thing. And then I'd go back downstairs, hop on the couch, open up my computer and get to it. But that balance was important. And one of the reasons that really kind of pushed me over the edge to start doing my own thing is because I started to lose that balance there. Mm. You know, I started taking on so much and doing too much that I broke it down and I realized that I was spending about 2 hours a day with my wife and daughter. Mm. And, you know, you having kids, they grow up so fast, you know, like one in one day they can learn something that blows your mind. Just where was I? Like, how did this happen? And, once I realized I kind of started losing that balance, I was like, hey, I need to get this figured out because they're only this age once, you know, my wife and I are only this age once. Like, I need to get a better balance on things. And it required me to, you know, I was like, I'm not going to give up, you know, what I've built, but I can give up this day job and work harder at this. And, you know, everything just kind of came full circle then.
I like it, man. So when you were getting started, or even just overall, like, who would you say kind of held you together, like your support system during this process?
Honestly, ever since back in school, But before she was my wife, she was my girlfriend, obviously, and she's always just been my biggest supporter. You know, whenever I made the switch years and years ago from, you know, wanting to become a designer, she was there for me, and she's been there for every job change and every, you know, new client stress headache. Hassle, you know, like conversation, like, hey, I really need a new set of ears to talk to about this, you know, like we do crop together, and you know, she's just always there for me, and she picks up the slack, you know, sometimes whenever I can't do, you know, bath time for our daughter, or you know, like this or that, she's like, no, go take care of what you need to take care of. And you know, like that's just, I mean, I'll never be able to catch up to that. Like, I'm just beyond thankful for that.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree, man. Sometimes, you know, our spouse may not be the one actually building the side hustle or whatever, but they give us the time by taking care of everything else.
Exactly. You know, they're absolutely instrumental, you know. Yeah.
So I'm glad. Say again?
I'm glad you get that. A lot of people don't understand that, but like it's just how it is.
I mean, it's the truth. I mean, it's either I'm trying to juggle working on a project and having my kids trying to get my attention, or she could take their attention while I work on a project. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just a total different dynamic.
Yeah, it definitely is.
So, you mentioned crop. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about crop. What is crop? How did the name even come about?
Naming stuff is definitely tough. the idea came about a few years ago. We're going into our third year this April, in just a few months, actually. But the idea came up. I'd never been to a conference. I'd done little student things before. And in-house, you know, like retreats and stuff whenever I worked at, you know, more corporate places. And I had been invited to speak at a corporate conference. You know, it was a big corporate company, so it was about 120, 150 people total over like 3 or 4 days. Big for me at the time. And while I was there speaking and just kind of absorbing everything, it was like my first taste into that world, even though it was like such a small slice, compared to what conferences are and can be, but it just ignited like a spark. And, you know, we're from Louisiana, but we live in Atlanta. So the idea was to kind of bring something back to Louisiana, because after we moved, Of course, after you move, they get the new big crazy movie theater, the restaurant you always wanted, or the creative scene starts blowing up, and you know, like that's kind of what happened. You know, so like we had moved, and the creative scene started blowing up, and I was like, oh well, you know, we can still be a part of this, and we can, you know, we can nurture it and help it along too by providing this resource. But it kind of turned into a much bigger thing than that. You know, like we've been really successful and fortunate to, you know, have, I mean, I think right now, like we're up to 21 states that have attended CROP. And, you know, like just two short years that we've had our events. And, but it's grown into it put Louisiana on the map as far as, you know, like a creative and cool city. Like you've got your quote unquote cool cities, and I'm glad that, you know, people come down there and kind of get this aha moment, like, oh man, this is really cool. Like, it's not just good food and good music. You've got like a lot of talent here. I think that's important, you know, for people to be aware of.
So, because I feel like that's like a big deal to kind of start a conference. What? Why a conference? Like, I understand you said you got a taste with speaking it, but there had to be a little bit more than
that. You know, I think it comes from a background in planning events. my wife and I, we both planned a lot of events while we lived in Louisiana. We were on a Mardi Gras crew, and we put together 9 Mardi Gras balls, a handful of charitable functions with that. She was on the cystic fibrosis committee. We've got a friend that has cystic fibrosis, and you know, she was on that committee for 7 years and put on numerous functions as well. So like that was just kind of in our, I feel like that was just in our wheelhouse as far as like skill sets that we had, you know, like we probably could have put on online workshops or something, but yeah, I was struggling to get Skype up and running earlier. So, you know, how am I going to get a production thing going to give workshops online? So we played to our strengths, and you know, we're fairly good at putting on events, and that's kind of how that came to the surface, I guess.
So is this like a Louisiana, New Orleans thing? Because almost everyone that I know from that area is always having either an event where families, they're always having something to get everybody together. Is that like a normal thing?
It is a big thing. I mean, it's all I know because that's where I grew up, but it's definitely a thing. You know, you've got tailgating for football games. You've got crawfish boils. You've got, you know, birthday parties. Like
right.
You know, everything's a big get together for the most part. You know, like you've got your Mardi Gras balls and parades, and it's, I mean, any excuse for a party, I guess.
Because I have neighbors, and 2 neighbors that are from New Orleans, and they're always having a get together. Always.
Yeah.
Like literally always. Yeah.
That's how it worked. You know, I think also maybe subconsciously, like it was also to provide ourselves with like a little bit of a social life, because like we moved to Georgia and didn't know anybody. So this is also a good reason to you know, get a little taste of a social life every now and then too, instead of just working all the time.
So you know, you worked your way up. You started a conference, you were on your own designing. Like, what would you say was the biggest struggle through this process?
You know, I don't know if there's any one big struggle. There's definitely a handful of small struggles. Mm-hmm. Biggest decisions were A, to branch out and do my own thing full time. It's scary. It's a scary position to be in whenever you have a family and you've got bills and a roof to keep over your head.
Right.
Sure, you can have that steady paycheck, but if it's starting to weigh in on the quality of life and the time that you're spending with your family, you know, like that was one of the scariest decisions I made. But it gets to a point where, you know, like what good is that paycheck if you have zero quality of life, if you're seeing your family 10 hours a week, you know, so like that was a huge hurdle that was a big mental thing to overcome. I knew exactly how much I was making a month, and that was guaranteed. Everything else was variable, but you know, you can look at that from a negative or positive, you know, viewpoint. Like I could make a little, or I could make a lot, you know, like, right. you gotta, the sky's the limit, and you kind of get out what you put in. You know, if you really want to, you know, put your best foot forward, you can double, triple what you made in a month at the agency.
That's true.
So I tend to look at things from like a realistic point of view that almost kind of like sometimes skirts the negative. Mm-hmm. And pulling myself out of that and looking at it from a different perspective. And, you know, well, yeah, I could be scared that I'm only going to make $500.
Right.
Or I could be happy that I might be able to make $5,000.
Right.
You know, so that was a big hurdle. And it took a lot of back and forth and like soul searching and late conversations with my wife and looking at bank accounts and looking at jobs coming in and it finally, it was just, you know, focus on the positive. You get nowhere focusing on the negative. It's just a trap.
Right, right. But I'm pretty sure, like, having your wife on board, like, really made a big difference.
It definitely did, you know. And again, why I say she's been my biggest supporter, because, you know, some spouses, significant others, would be like, wait, what? You're going to quit this job that is, you know, paying for this and that? And they're like, no, I'm sorry, that's not happening. You know, and luckily my wife isn't wired that way. She realized what the end game is, and, you know, that at some point, you know, she's always wanted me to build something for myself. And, you know, it takes a while. It doesn't happen overnight, but it finally got to a point where, like, hey, it's time to build something for yourself. And, I'm really grateful that she's one of those wives that stands behind rather than, hang on, we got to keep this paycheck going.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. So, crop is coming up. I think it is the first weekend in April.
Yeah, it's April 5th and 6th.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thursday and Friday.
So, give me a little gist of what's going on that weekend.
So we do things on a Thursday and Friday, and that works out really well because A, people get a couple days off work or school, so that's always good. You know, the first night, people start coming in Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. Everything's held in downtown. We've got a really great venue and a really great space where, you know, the entire event is held in a building in downtown. So people start coming in Wednesday night, and, you know, over the past, you know, 2 years, 3 years now, that you've got a little pre-party Wednesday night. People meet up, get all excited, and then Thursday we kick off with a full day of workshops. Mm-hmm. You know, so our workshops can range from anything from lettering, logo design, presentation. We've got a great workshop at the Forefathers this year on, like, the power of presentation and standing out. So we try to make sure that our workshops are, like, kind of like run the gamut of disciplines. So there's kind of something for everybody, because we've got such a wide demographic of people. We've got, you know, we've got lots of students, we've got lots of freelancers, professionals, agencies, you know, so we treat our workshops like a school schedule. It's all day. Like, it starts at 8. There's no a la carte thing. It's like that's your block schedule. You start at 8 and you end at 6, and you get 4 or 5 workshops in there. Then we typically have a party that night, and we kick things off with keynotes on Friday. So Friday is like a full day of keynotes. We'll have we've got a great lineup this year. We've got James Victory, Young Jerks, Dan Casero, Dan Christofferson. We've got Daniel Evans, Marmalade Blue type. Always makes me so hungry looking at her work.
Nice.
We've got a whole gang of people this year. We conclude everything with a Friday night party, and then this year, first year, we're going to do it again with that whole Louisiana excuse to have a party. Wow. We're going to do a crawfish boil Saturday morning.
Goodness.
Cuz a lot of people have never had it, you know, and we can't serve it at any of our parties just because food allergies or this and that. So, you know, like, we're doing an unofficial crawfish boil. Like, hey, this is what you're getting into. If you have shellfish allergies, you know, take care of that. If you can't handle spiciness, take care of that. And, so we're going to end everything with a crawfish boil this year.
That sounds good. So what's next for Matt?
Really right now, it's taking care of, crop. It's full blown crop mode right now. After that, it'll also be full blown crop mode because, we do pop-up crops now, which is a satellite event that goes on in a different city. So as soon as we're done with crop, in April, we'll be tidying up everything for pop-up crop in August.
And so where are you going to be at this time? Because I think the last time you were in what, Texas?
Yeah, this past November was our first pop-up, and we did that in Austin, Texas. It was great.
Cool
spot. Super fun. And this August we'll be in Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
So those are gonna keep me busy for the foreseeable future. In addition to you know all the design work that I need to get done as right. well. But luckily I'm finding a good balance for things. I'm giving myself timelines, and you know that's a dangerous pitfall of being your own boss, is you don't really have anybody to boss you around. So I've got all sorts of apps that I use now, and keeps me in check, which that's I cool. need. So
the pop-up crop, like, kind of tell me what does that entail? Because I know you did a panel, because Scotty was telling me about it.
Yeah, Scotty, we love Scotty Russell. So pop-up crop is like a super condensed version of regular crop. Mm. So instead of being one full day of workshops and one full day of keynotes, we mix it all into one day. And kind of what that does is it keeps things interesting throughout the day for sure. It doesn't allow for boredom, you know, because like one minute you might be, you know, creating a logo that's going to go get screen printed across town, and then you're going to trade postcards. Like it was a crazy workshop we had with Industry Print Shop. Wow. And you know, but then you're listening, next thing you know, you're listening to Draplin speak, and then you're learning all about letterers with like our Good Type panel. So it's just kind of everything rolled into one day. And it's been, I mean, it was great. Like the response from Austin was awesome, because I'm sure at first they're like, okay, so this guy that lives in Atlanta puts on a conference in Louisiana is wanting to do one here. Like probably like kind of left scratching their heads, but luckily, you know, they embraced it. And, it was great. I'm really looking forward to the pop-ups. I feel like it kind of, you know, it gives us an opportunity to bring crop to other places, and, right. At the same time, they start coming to, you know, like we opened up ticket sales that day at Pop Up Crop, and you know, next thing you know, we've got Austin people coming down to Baton Rouge to hang out, and that's really cool.
Yeah, and that was the first thing that came to my mind when I heard about it. I was like, man, this is like a pretty cool idea to get the word out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it's definitely been great for that, but to just continue the, you know. You kind of get hooked on that community, you know, to where like, sure, you can go to your one conference a quarter or whatever, but you know, I want to do all of them, and yeah. Providing more of them allows me to do that. So, because yeah. I can't always break away, but if I put one on, I'll definitely be able to go to that one.
Right. So we never got into how the name came about, though. What was the brainchild?
Naming stuff is really tough, as you know. You've got four kids. Name, you know, and like that's a person. You know, like naming a company or product isn't that final, but it's still tough. You know, like you can kind of if it's the wrong name, it's going to give the wrong impression. You know, like if it's got a level of cheesiness to it, people are going to just be like, nah. But crop kind of came about. We wanted something short and succinct. Mm-hmm. We wanted something that focused on bringing people together. So, you know, whenever you're doing a composition and you focus in on the best part of that, you know, like you're cropping it. You've also got crops that grow, and you're right. cultivating. So like it kind of hit on a couple different levels, the name. And we threw it around to a few trusted friends and that would shoot us straight, right. And you know, like, let us know. And we've gotten overwhelmingly positive responses about the name. So like that's kind of where it came from. You know, like the idea of bringing people together, focusing on the best of something, and yeah, that's how Crop got its name.
All right, so. What advice would you have for creatives? You know, I mean, you've kind of touched every avenue in your journey, you know what I mean? What advice would you have for creatives?
Don't get complacent. Don't think you've got it all together. It sounds like a cheesy motivational poster, but like just never, you know, like never stop. Like never stop pushing yourself. You know, like the moment you stop pushing yourself is the moment other people pass you by and you start kind of doing a disservice to yourself. You know, like we're just like keep that pencil sharp, you know, and yeah. That's pretty much what I tell any young designer that I talk to. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, always learn. Don't think you know everything because you don't and you won't.
Right.
And just keep evolving. You know, like whenever I was young, I watched a lot of older designers that were either art directors or creative directors or just kind of senior designers that were way older than me. And, you know, like I kind of looked at them, like not in a judgmental way, but just like I kind of looked at them and saw that like, man, like they're really unhappy where they are. Mm. You know, like they probably stopped evolving 15, 20 years ago. And like that just always stuck out to me. I was like, I'd never want that to happen because right. I don't want to be, no matter where I am, I don't want to be, you know, 40, 45 years old going in somewhere and with a chip on my shoulder and not keeping up with whatever new hot shot kid and in circles around me. And I was like, I don't want that. I'm going to keep pushing and evolving.
Awesome, man. Well, I mean, I love what you're doing. I mean, keep it up, man. I really respect the quality and the consistency that you approach, you know what I mean?
Thank you, Darryl.
The way how you do your thing.
I appreciate
it, man. Well, man, thank you for coming on. We'll definitely keep in touch, but I really appreciate you taking the time out to do this, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. I really appreciate you having me.
All right, man. I'll let you go for now, but take care, man.
All right. Later.
All right. Peace.
Bye.
I want to say thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at dpcreates on Instagram or Twitter. And please leave me a review on iTunes because that helps the podcast to grow. Thanks again. Be blessed.